Because the laws that govern the created world can't explain miracles, so there must be something bigger behind them. And the only thing bigger or more powerful than the creation is the creator, God, right? So miracles are considered to be events where God intervenes and supersedes the laws that he puts in his creation. It's kind of like there may be a rule at work that you have certain blackout weeks that you can't take vacation. This just happened to our daughter-in-law when she became our daughter-in-law 2 weeks ago. She works in IT in the UW system, and so 2 weeks before school starts, you cannot take vacation. But she needed vacation. She's getting married, right? But you can go to the person higher up. She could go to her boss's boss and say, can I have this time off, and get special permission, right? The person who made the rules can override the rules. So we're bound by the rules of creation, but the creator is not. He has the power and authority to decide when he's going to suspend the rules. So at some point, though, in our lives, all of us come to the end of ourselves. We live in a well-resourced society. We have the ability to live quite self-sufficient lives. We have pretty much adequate income, perhaps not as much as you'd like, but enough to stay alive. We have welfare systems. We have good health care. We have safe homes. We have some sort of family or community around us. We have meaningful and often enjoyable jobs and hobbies. We have insurance agents, financial advisors. We have computers and software and apps and Google and ChatGPT. There's so many places that we can turn. But for all our wonderful resources, we still sometimes have problems that just don't have nice, tidy solutions. Sometimes there's no good way to fix our health issues, and we can go crazy chasing conventional or unconventional ways to do that. Sometimes our mental health battles feel overwhelming. Sometimes relationships get complicated or weird, and it's just not in your power to make them peaceful. Sometimes we don't feel we have the support that we need or the finances we need for a particular thing, or wisdom to know the best course of action, or enough time or energy to just get it all done. So, is there something in your life right now where you feel like you need God to do something surprising, where you would really welcome his unexpected intervention, something beyond what's naturally possible? Is there a situation where you've exhausted your resources? You've tried everything you can think of and you're out of options. And this could be something that's been part of your life for so long that you're really losing hope that it could change. Maybe you're bordering on despair. You're beginning to lose any sense of confidence or optimism. Maybe you're running on adrenaline to work and worry and manipulate things to the max, so using even extreme or unusual measures to try and fix whatever's going on. Maybe you feel anxious and scared at the prospect of never finding a solution, feeling like things could easily go south at any moment, or you're so tired that you just feel empty or numb, and it's all you can do to get through the day. And perhaps you aren't in dire need of God to do something miraculous right now, and that's good, because it's really exhausting to live life on the edge all the time. But you can probably think of a time when you have been in that situation, or perhaps you know someone else who's in a desperate place right now. And so today we're going to read about two people who were desperate for God to intervene in their lives in a miraculous way. The same story is recorded in three of the four Gospels. It's in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And this is actually two intertwined stories. They may be very familiar to you. The raising of Jairus' daughter and from the dead, and the healing of the woman with chronic bleeding. And have any of you watched The Chosen? You watched The Chosen? I just loved the way that this story was handled in The Chosen. I thought it was just really beautiful, really brought it to life. If you're new to church and faith, you may be hearing them for the first time, which I think would be lovely because you're in for a treat. These are great stories. I've read them. I've heard them in Sunday school when I was a kid. I've listened to sermons on them. I've done Bible studies on them, but they never get old. These are real life encounters that Jesus had with real people, perhaps people that we can relate to. So when we see how these people approach Jesus, and sought his miraculous intervention in their lives, we can have fresh faith and hope for whatever we're dealing with in our lives. These two people came to Jesus because they had nowhere else to turn. They tried everything and nothing else was working. So let's listen with fresh ears to what happened. We're going to read Mark 5, 21 to 43. So I have a marker in here. You'd think, here we go. There we go. And it's the right way up, which is good. And when Jesus had crossed again in the boat to the other side, and that's the other side of Lake Galilee, a great crowd gathered about him, and he was beside the sea. Then came one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name, and seeing him, he fell at his feet and implored him earnestly, saying, "My little daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her so that she may be made well and live." And he went with him. And a great crowd followed him and thronged about him. And there was a woman who had had a discharge of blood for 12 years and who had suffered much under many physicians and had spent all that she had and was no better, but rather grew worse. She had heard the reports about Jesus and came up behind him in the crowd and touched his garment. For she said, "If I touch even his garments, I will be made well." And immediately the flow of blood dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. And Jesus, perceiving in himself that power had gone out from him, immediately turned about in the crowd and said, "Who touched my garments?" And his disciples said to him, "You see the crowd pressing about you, and yet you say, 'Who touched me?'" And he looked around to see who had done it. But the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease." While he was still speaking, there came from the ruler's house some who said, "Your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further?" But overhearing what they said, Jesus said to the ruler of the synagogue, "Do not fear, only believe." And he allowed no one to follow him except Peter and James and John, the brother of James. They came to the house of the ruler of the synagogue, and Jesus saw a commotion, people weeping and wailing loudly. And when he had entered, he said to them, "Why are you making a commotion and weeping? The child is not dead, but sleeping." And they laughed at him. But he put them all outside and took the child's father and mother and those who were with him and went in where the child was. Taking her by the hand, he said to her, "Talitha kumi," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, arise." And immediately the girl got up and began walking, for she was 12 years of age. And they were immediately overcome with amazement. And he strictly charged them that no one should know this and told them to give her something to eat. Two people, two situations, lots of contrasts, but both had a desperate need and had faith that Jesus could do something about that need, something beyond what seemed likely or humanly possible in the natural world. Jairus was a respected man in his Jewish community. A synagogue ruler was kind of like an elder or deacon. Around here we call our deacons, I guess they are ministry leaders, if you're looking for a parallel. He was the guy who organized the weekend services. Who's going to read? Who's going to teach and lead worship? Who's going to handle the live stream and put the sermon on YouTube? Who's going to make the coffee and all that? Jairus was known by name, by everyone. He was a visible figure in town. The woman, did you notice, had no name. She obviously wasn't particularly important in the way that society measured importance. She really shouldn't even have been out in public because according to Old Testament law, women were considered unclean if they were bleeding, and anyone who touched her would be ritually unclean. Being unclean meant you couldn't go to the synagogue or the temple to worship. You had to go through various rituals to make yourself clean again. Devout Jewish men actually avoided ever touching women just in case they were bleeding. Yes, we're talking about periods. I know we don't like talking about this stuff in church. Passages that talk about menstrual issues are just about as high on the awkwardness scale as passages that talk about circumcision. We love those too. But here it is in the Bible. It's part of life. Anyway, her bleeding made her unclean. So unlike Jairus, who organized synagogue worship every week, she probably hadn't even been able to attend worship for 12 years. She would have been almost like a leper in that society. She wasn't an outcast for medical reasons, but for ritual religious reasons. That's a really hard life. Jairus had enjoyed about 12 years of family life with his daughter. I don't know if we have any 12-year-olds here this morning. I know we have girls about that age in the church, give or take a year or two. And you know, 12-year-old girls may have their moments, but they're a real source of joy, aren't they? Girls bring a lot of life and personality and creativity into the home. And don't get me wrong, boys are a source of joy too. We're not dissing you boys. This story just happens to be about a girl. I remember taking our daughter Selena to register for seventh grade. One of the teachers had recruited her to help, and she was just full of confidence at that point in her life. She kind of discovered her own sense of style. She got a cute haircut. And she wasn't quite an adult yet, but she was more than a child. And by that age, you begin to get a sense of who God made your kids to be. There's lots of hope for who they're going to become. 12 years of joy. The woman had endured 12 years of suffering, looking for solutions to her bleeding problem, trying all kinds of doctors. And you can only imagine what kinds of treatments she was subjected to in the first century AD. She'd used up all her resources, and she'd actually got worse rather than better. That means that if this story had happened today, she would have been dealing with anemia and social and religious isolation since 2013. So think of what's happened in your life since 2013. It's a really long time. Jairus' daughter was sick, really sick. In fact, she was dying. Jairus' family joy was about to crumble. We don't know what she was sick with. We can only assume that the doctors had nothing more to offer and the prayers of the religious leaders in the synagogue had not been answered, because it's likely Jairus had pursued those options. Jesus was an itinerant teacher. He wasn't part of the respected religious establishment where Jairus worked. Jesus was already unpopular with the religious leaders because they saw him as a threat to the status quo in the system, and they enjoyed prestige and control. So Jairus may have been risking his job by asking Jesus for help. So it took serious humility for him to approach this unconventional teacher and the miracle worker. The equivalent might be different for all of us, but depending on your faith background and your preferences, if you've got a very traditional background, it might take humility to ask for help from a faith leader or a TV evangelist. If you have a more charismatic background, it might be hard to seek out a Catholic priest or someone else from a mainline church. And if you have no background, asking anyone non-medical to come and heal your dying child might feel humbling and risky and just maybe a little crazy. But Jairus was desperate. He'd either seen or heard that Jesus could heal people that the doctors couldn't, and he chose to hope that Jesus would be able to heal his daughter. This respected man fell at Jesus' feet. He put himself totally at his mercy. And he implored him to come to his house. This wasn't a casual request. It was a frantic appeal. The woman took a huge risk working her way through the crowd to approach Jesus from behind, because if anybody who knew that she had the problem that she had saw her, she'd be in serious trouble for exposing others to her uncleanness. She wanted to keep it on the down low, just touch his cloak, low to the ground, so nobody'd notice her in the crowd. She wouldn't try and disgrace him by touching his actual body, just his clothes. She could only hope that would be enough. So how does Jesus respond to these people's desperate faith? How do you expect Jesus to respond when you have a situation that you can't fix. And I want us to think about that for a minute, because how you expect Jesus to respond really matters. If you expect Jesus to blow you off or make light of your concern and remind you that, you know, other people have way bigger problems than you do, or if you expect him to rub your nose in it and shame you for getting yourself into a mess, or you expect him to use your circumstances to teach you a lesson or to be angry with you or disappointed in you, then you aren't very likely to bring your desperate need to Jesus, are you? Who needs that? You can get more support from Google and more sympathy from a bartender. So we need to take a good look at how Jesus responded, because how Jesus responded to them is how we can expect him to respond to us. Hebrews 13:8 tells us that Jesus Christ is the same yesterday and today and forever. So the same Jesus who helped these two people with their very real needs will help you with your needs too. So first of all, we see that Jesus isn't formulaic. If we're looking for universal principles to extract from these stories and apply to our lives about how Jesus works miracles, we can easily be frustrated. There is no formula for how Jesus is going to respond to people. God's not a cosmic vending machine. We don't insert this specific prayer and do this specific ritual and get this specific blessing and this specific healing. He's a person we relate to, not an appliance that we use. We see this all through the gospel stories, but these two intertwined vignettes are absolutely a case in point. There's so many contrasts and differences here. Jesus' power heals the woman instantly, but he takes time with her and delays going with Jairus to the point where his daughter died. The woman received her healing passively without even asking Jesus. She just touched his clothes and his power restored her to health. But Jesus responded to Jairus' request and actually went with him and actively spoke and touched his daughter to restore her life. Jesus commended the woman for her faith, whereas he needed to instruct Jairus to choose to hold on to faith over fear. Jesus called the woman out of hiding and made her healing public, but he told Jairus and his wife not to tell people how he'd brought their daughter back to life. He didn't want to make a spectacle out of it. The point is that you can depend on Jesus to be unpredictable. If you like rules and principles and manuals, that's going to be difficult. But you cannot fit Jesus into a mold. Yes, there are some principles. If you walk through life with Jesus and get to know him and obey his word, he will bless you. But you cannot dictate or predict what that blessing will look like exactly. There's no formula for that. I love how Jesus is 100% present to each person and each situation. Jairus asks him to go with him, and he goes. The woman sneaks up, and he feels power go out of him, and he takes time to address her personally. He doesn't leave her as a passive and impersonal recipient of healing. He's present to her needs even beyond physical healing, which we're going to talk more about in a little bit. When Jairus is told his daughter is dead, he addresses his need at the moment and encourages him to have faith. And at the house, he attends personally to the girl with just her parents and the three disciples present. He gives this very public figure a moment of privacy for this tender moment. He shows them personally the extent of his power, not just to heal, but to resurrect life. Jesus could have got off the boat, waved his hand, looked up to his Father in heaven, and healed Jairus' daughter, the bleeding woman, and everybody else in the crowd with some sort of ailment. But he didn't have to interact with any of them, did he? But that's not his style. He wasn't just working a crowd and showing his power. He chose to be present to the personal and unique need of each person. You can expect him to be present and uniquely involved with your needs too. Your relationship with Jesus is the main thing, not the miracles he performs for you. He doesn't want you to put your faith and hope in his miraculous power, faith that the Jesus genie will come out of the lamp every time you rub it and do your bidding. He wants you to have faith in him, that his presence is with you in every aspect of your life, every moment of your life, and that that will be enough. Whether it looks like he's working in amazing ways, or it seems like he's waited for your hope to die, just like Jairus' daughter died. And whether he shows up in the mundane, everyday details, or in those wowza, miraculous, oh my gosh, that could only be Jesus kind of ways. Jesus is always present, and he's always personal. And Jesus' timeline is always perfect. You know, Jesus was busy. He had his work cut out with teaching disciples in the crowd who often didn't understand these new ways that he was talking about God. And everyone wanted healing, of course. If there's someone in town who can heal everything, then he's going to draw a crowd. Who doesn't want to get rid of their pain and their problems? And people love the miracles. Crowd of 5,000, no caterer, no problem. One person's lunch is enough when Jesus is there. Jesus' days were full. But did you notice he was never in a hurry? He was never rushed. He was always patient, and he took his time with each person. Whoever was in front of him had his full attention at that moment. He took one day at a time and one person at a time. And he was always open to interruptions when someone had a need. And Jesus is always available when you need him too. He isn't preoccupied with more important concerns. He isn't overwhelmed by the number of people who need him or stressed out and irritated that these humans get themselves into so much trouble. He isn't surprised or caught off guard when someone experiences a crisis. He's available. He's compassionate. And he's never too busy to spend time with you and be with you and help you. But that doesn't mean he always attends to your needs on your schedule. When Jairus received news that his daughter had died, he must have been crushed. Jesus, if you'd just moved a little bit faster, if you hadn't taken time out with that woman, I mean, she wasn't dying. You could come back and heal her later. Then my daughter wouldn't have died. And now she's dead. And I know you could have healed her while she was sick, but death's final. That's beyond even your reach. Jesus' priorities and timeline probably didn't make sense to Jairus or to the crowd. But we have to be careful not to impose a schedule that makes sense to us onto God. In the moment, it may have looked like Jesus made a mistake that cost the life of a precious daughter. But in fact, Jesus knew what he was doing. He used the seemingly crazy timeline to show his power over not just disease and disability, but also over death. It's frustrating when God doesn't seem to be listening to our prayers, isn't it? Especially if they're prayers that we've been praying for a long time. One of the things that we can see in these stories is encouragement to stick with Jesus, whatever the timeline, whatever you're pursuing him for or needing his help with. He may have something even better and greater in mind if you just hang in there and wait for it. And you know, Jesus calls us to have an active faith. Sometimes faith, the idea of faith, can seem a bit nebulous. One of the dictionary definitions of faith is a firm belief in something for which there is no proof. And that is part of it. Hebrews 11:1 describes faith as the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. But in these stories, Jesus shows that faith is also an action. It's a choice to pursue Jesus. Jairus could have stayed home with his daughter and just prayed for healing or hoped that Jesus might randomly stop by. The woman could have stayed away from the crowd and just hopelessly followed all the rules that she was supposed to follow because she was unclean. But for both of them, faith meant actively seeking Jesus out, getting close to him, going to find him, getting close enough for Jairus to speak with him and for the woman to touch his cloak. Faith that Jesus can do miracles is more than just a vague hope that he might surprise us. Faith involves actively going after Jesus, talking to him, paying attention to how he's leading us, and sometimes being willing to take risks. Jesus talked to both these people about faith. The woman had faith, but Jesus knew that she needed to be commended for it. It needed to be spoken, because she probably mostly felt desperation, not faith. Perhaps she wasn't aware that behind that desperation was actual faith, that in spite of the failure of everything else she tried, Jesus could heal her. This woman didn't necessarily have a lot of theological knowledge. In fact, because she wasn't allowed to go to the synagogue because she was unclean, she may well have had a very limited understanding of who God was. And of course, we do want to know God more. That's why we're here this morning. That's why we read our Bibles and we pray and we learn. But faith often has relatively little to do with what we know about God and more to do with our longing for God's powerful grace, longing for his kindness to shine through for us. I hope that's encouraging to you, especially if you feel like you have a lot to learn. You can still follow Jesus with faith. If you come to Jesus in faith, even imperfect faith, you can expect him to encourage you and commend you because you're putting your faith in the right place. Jesus told the woman that her faith had made her well. So does that mean that all you need to be healed is to have enough faith? Faith is the one necessary ingredient for healing. And if you aren't healed, it's because you don't have enough faith, right? No. Remember, Jesus isn't formulaic. Faith in Jesus is one important part of the relationship with him that opens the door for him to help and heal us. But that's simply the thing that Jesus wanted to highlight and commend for this particular woman. Doesn't mean it's the only thing. And as we look at other miracles in this series, we're going to see other things highlighted that could lead up to miracles happening. Faith is important, but it's not the only thing that moves God to do miracles. Jairus needed more faith. He had faith that perhaps Jesus could heal his daughter, but he didn't have faith that he could bring her back to life after she died. Jesus told Jairus, "Do not fear, only believe." It's natural to fear when you get bad news, isn't it? It can crash over you like a wave. For Jairus, it was probably fear of a future without his daughter in the family, fear of the pain, fear of the loneliness, fear of people saying hurtful things, fear of how his wife would handle the loss. Death seemed so final, no room for faith. But Jesus wanted him to know that nothing is ever final, nothing is beyond his reach and power to act, even death. We can expect that Jesus might do things for us that feel impossible. He might heal relationships that feel too broken to mend. He might provide for us when our resources are depleted. He might breathe life into dreams that we gave up on long ago. Ephesians 3:20 tells us that he is able to do far more abundantly than all that we ask or think. Jesus isn't limited by our expectations, what we think is reasonable, or by the solutions that we can think up. He can't be contained by any boxes that we might want to put him in. Jesus encourages us to have faith that he could do absolutely anything at any moment. And remember that the faith is in him, not necessarily in him doing the thing that we would like him to do, the way that we would like it to do it, and in the timing that we would like. The question isn't, do you believe in miracles? The question is, do you have faith in Jesus, the one who can work miracles? It's faith that he will be with us. He will be with us. If we load up too many expectations of what God will do, we may miss what he's actually doing. And we may not notice the ways that he's loving us and helping us and showing us mercy and surprising us. And you know, when we have problems that we can't fix, we can know that we can tend to lose hope. But we need to know that Jesus offers us the hope that he can always do more. You know, we often start out full of hope that this solution will fix our problem or this treatment will heal us. But after a while, when plan A doesn't work, and then plan B doesn't work, and plan C doesn't work, and plans D, E, F, and G don't work, it's easy to believe that there is no solution, there is no hope. Jesus instills a sense of hope by the way he responds to these people. He didn't just fix their problems. He did fix their problems. He stopped the woman's bleeding and he brought Jairus' daughter back to life and health. But he also did more. I love that Jesus didn't let the woman get away with just physical healing. He knew she had another significant need. She did need healing. She needed to be physically healthy. She needed to be ceremonially clean so that she could fully participate in the life of the community and the synagogue. But after a life of living in the shadows, living as an unclean person, she needed to be brought out of hiding. He had some specific and important things that he said to her. He called her daughter. An unclean person didn't belong in society, but he called her a name that is one of the clearest signs of belonging. He called her family, a person of value to him. He assured her she was worthy of a relationship with him and with her community. But you think about that. I'm just thinking as I'm saying this, you've got a crowd going after, you know, with Jesus, he's going to heal somebody's daughter because they know she's precious. And he turns around and calls the woman daughter. It's beautiful. Perhaps she felt her suffering was her fault because she'd done something wrong or she wasn't worthy of healing. And Jesus publicly commended her faith and even encouraged her that she'd been healed because of her faith. And he told her to go in peace. After 12 years of desperate turmoil, he gave her permission. He instructed her to enjoy the peace of being well and being clean. And Jesus did more for Jairus, too. He came asking for healing for a sick child, but he received resurrection of a dead child. Jesus showed Jairus there's always hope. Nothing, even death, is beyond his reach. With Jesus, there's always hope. He could do anything at any moment. He loves us. He has this unselfish love that motivates everything that he does. He knows what's best for us in any situation, and he has absolute power to move on our behalf. We do need to talk here a little bit about healing and resurrection, though. When you read all these stories, everyone that Jesus tried to heal was healed. Everyone that Jesus tried to resurrect came back to life. He didn't heal everyone. He didn't resurrect everyone. But he was never unsuccessful with those that he ministered to. And we don't see that so much today, do we? Sometimes we pray for healing and people are healed. And it's wonderful, sometimes quite miraculously, but not always. We've prayed for a lot of people in this church. Some have received healing. Others haven't. And perhaps you've heard stories of people being resurrected from the dead. There's valid reports that it does still sometimes happen, but it's rare. And by the way, everyone that Jesus healed and everyone he resurrected to life on earth did eventually die. Our ultimate hope is the eternal resurrection that Jesus gives those who follow him after our lives here on earth end. So why are healing and resurrection rare today? I don't know. I wish I had a nice and tidy answer for you, and I don't. Genuine healing does seem to be more common in developing nations. Perhaps people are more desperate. They don't have all the resources that we have, and they're more inclined to turn to God for help. Several years ago, I was talking to a pastor's wife who'd relatively recently come from one of the African nations, and I wish I remembered which one, but I don't. She'd only been here a couple years, and I asked her what she missed about her country, and she said she missed the ministry. She said people there had so few resources and nowhere to turn that when they were sick or if there was no rain or if a truck or a bicycle that was essential to them broke down or something got stolen, they would come for prayer. And they saw so many prayers answered, so many miracles. God moved in amazing ways again and again and again because they turned to God in desperate faith. They had nowhere else to turn. And I don't think that's the whole answer, but I think that's part of it. We rely on so many things, don't we? So many resources that I mentioned earlier. We have so many places to turn for help. And I do think these amazing resources are gifts that God gives us. He's given us the ability to research and understand and come up with treatments, come up with creative ideas. But often the last person we turn to is God. Sometimes we don't receive from God because we don't ask. But I also know some of you have asked, especially for healing, and some of you have received it, some of you haven't. And I don't know why. I just know Jesus isn't formulaic. We do need to keep asking. We will keep asking. I heard once, if you don't pray for anybody, nobody will get healed. If you pray for somebody, somebody might get healed, right? God does sometimes heal miraculously. And when he doesn't, he's still the same Jesus that we see in these stories. When you bring your needs to Jesus with faith, when you hold on to hope that he will come through for you, you can be confident that he will be personal and present to your unique needs. He's never too busy for you. He's never too rushed or hurried to give you his full attention, and he'll absolutely be with you. He'll treat you as a valued son or daughter. Whatever you've done or not done, you're his precious child. And he will treat you as such. And he will offer you peace. Whatever storm you're in, and even if it's still raging, he can help you go in peace because he is in control. Just being with Jesus is cause for peace. He can handle anything. He will fan into flame even your smallest spark of faith and encourage you to have bigger and more active faith. And he will surprise you with more. Not the more you thought you wanted, but always more of him. He'll surprise you with blessings beyond or very different from what you might have hoped or asked for. Faith and hope are very interrelated, aren't they? Jesus wants us to have faith that he can do anything, and he wants us to hope that he will. So if the worship team would come back up, I'm going to invite you to close your eyes for a moment and just listen to how God's Spirit wants to personalize this for you. If you have a desperate need right now, you can bring that to Jesus. You can ask him to renew your faith and hope that he will come through for you. You may remember a time when you were desperate in the past. Perhaps you didn't even notice at the time, but now as you look back, you can see that Jesus totally came through for you, maybe in an unexpected way. Perhaps you were desperate for him to heal a relationship, and in the process, he healed you of your pride. Perhaps you were desperate for him to provide, and in the process, he gave you surprising contentment. Perhaps you were desperate for a break, and he gave you unexpected endurance and patience. Perhaps you were desperate for physical healing, and in the process he taught you to rely on his strength rather than your own. Thank him for how he helped you in a time of need. Allow the memory of that time to fuel your faith and your hope that he will be there for you again anytime you need him. Jesus wants you to come to him with your needs, to bring your problems to him. He wants to be with you in every detail of your life, even the areas where you don't seem to need his help, where you're managing quite nicely on your own. And he especially wants to meet you in all the places that are beyond your control, where your solutions are exhausting you and where you're tempted to lose hope. He especially wants to hear your prayers for people who don't know him yet, to continue to hope and to pray that they will put their faith in him, however unlikely and impossible that seems. Come to him Ask him for what you need and have faith and hope that he will come through for you. The same Jesus who was present and available and powerful in Jairus' family and in the bleeding woman's life will be present and available and powerful in your life too. Amen.